welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 443. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today is Rick Cowley.
Hello, hello.
Only Rick Cowley because Emily is currently battling with Windows 10, which is mostly what you do with Windows 10, as I understand it.
I've never had a problem with Windows 10. I don't know why everybody else seems to. I guess I just got lucky.
I'm still on Windows 7. I am still refusing to come up there and join you guys in the year 2018. Because 8 blew so hard, and 10 is just... No, I don't like it. I've got it on that laptop that I use, the work laptop, when I take to places, and I still don't like it. It still makes me angry. And the drivers are garbage. So, yeah, Windows 7 for life. I am... The day that Microsoft stops supporting updates for Windows 7 is going to be a dark day indeed for me. Everything's just going to collapse.
All good things must come to an end.
No! No! keep the good things going. End the bad things. Why doesn't anyone think of that? Leave the good things. We like them. They're nice. Just the two of us, but that doesn't mean there's a dearth of content. We've got loads of stuff to chat about. We are going to be discussing the continuing lore shenanigans going on between PUBG and Fortnite, a company that appears to be sort of suing itself. Rick and I are going to try and get to the bottom of it, but to be honest, we're a bit confused about what's going on. Let's talk Pokemon Let's Go Eevee and Pikachu and actual real-life Pokeballs and a bloody Switch game that's out now. We've also got a little bit of news about Professor Layton. Plus, we review that aforementioned Pokemon Switch game. We've got the likes of Feist, Might and Magic Elemental Guardian, Space Pioneers, and more out this week. But first, it's the news. So, this whole Fortnite PUBG debacle, right? We've covered that one side was going to try and sue the other side, particularly PUBG suing Fortnite. And it was been bounced around for a bit, and it never really came to anything. We never saw any, like, conclusions or papers drawn up or anything like that. I thought it was a bit dead now, like they'd given up on all this. Because behind the scenes, Tencent is the sort of parent company, which... I mean, it's one of the biggest gaming companies in the entire planet. But they recently acquired a 40% stake in Fortnite. Or Epic, rather, the company that owns Fortnite. This is where you just have to keep start going further up the buddy tree. So Epic make Fortnite, yeah? And then you've got Bluehole, which makes PUBG. So Tencent acquired a 40% stake in Epic, right? But also, Tencent has been making moves to try and acquire, either entirely or at least large chunks of, Bluehole. So Tencent is trying to own both the companies that produce the two biggest Battle Royale shooters.
Yes.
Some are saying they already have acquired Bluehole, but I can't find any evidence to suggest that's true. I just hear noises that they are trying to. They're in the process of doing so. Meanwhile, while this is going on, one company is suing the other company for copying its stuff. Originally, they were talking about, like, we're just going to try and sue Fortnite because, you know, it's copying the Battle Royale thing, and that was a bit vague. Now they have not only sort of released documents and papers in that, they've gotten very specific as to what they're trying to sue them for. So, they're talking not just about the Battle Royale, hey, you've got, you know, 50 or 100 people and one man left standing, that whole thing, which is arguably the most unique thing about the Battle Royale shooter. They've gone right down to nitty-gritty, and you can see this in 11 specific things that they've published, saying, this is how Fortnite is ripping off PUBG. I've sent you the little link to show you what it is. So, it starts off with the blue circle effect. Which, if you've played either game, is just that big force field barrier that then gradually closes in around you as the playing area shrinks and the number of people on the field drops. So they're saying big blue glowy field like the Phantom Menace at the end.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is. Or Ready Player One, if you've seen that at the end.
I've not seen it.
Same thing. Let's sue them as well. Let's sue Spielberg while we're at it. How very dare you. And definitely sue the author of Ready Player One. Ernest Cline.
Absolutely.
Because he's a terrible, terrible hack. Moving on. Similar weapons as well. And they've cited a whole list of weapons here that are apparently, you know, identical or very, very similar to.
Some of these weapons are hilarious, though, because it's stuff like assault rifle and revolver. Like, stuff you find in every single game.
Yeah. Yeah. This is where you get into the kind of tall reeds with this suing game stuff, because more so than any other industry, it's very tricky to sort of copyright. We've talked about this before as well, copyright genres and weaponry. It's like, yes, what happens if just ID Software just turn around now and sue every single first-person shooter for copying Wolfenstein, you know? It's just like, you can't really do that. There's a point at which it goes beyond. And certainly the idea of games employing weaponry, also weaponry inspired by real-life weaponry, for example, an assault rifle or a submachine gun or a grenade. You can't copyright a grenade. If you call it something, if you choose, like, we're going to make a Star Wars game and our grenades are called thermal detonators, because that's a thing in Star Wars lore, you could copyright that because it's a unique thing. But just the term grenade, no, you can't have that. Don't be weird. That'd be like copyrighting using humans in your games. We made a game and the human avatar was in it, and now we're the only people allowed to use human avatars. Everyone else, just dogs. All games.
Oh, that would be great, wouldn't it?
Actually, the internet would like that, wouldn't it? Or
all
cats.
Games or cats. That's the dream. I think you've come up with a solution for video games.
There's already enough games where you just play as animals. We're going to be doing it. Might and Magic. That's all beasties.
Yeah,
Pokemon as well. Oh, God. Can't do anything. There's no original thoughts left in the world, Rick. It's rubbish. Everyone should just sue everybody. The other thing they point out in the list of similarities is the compass UI and the white and blue circle UIs, i.e. when you look at the map, it shows you circles which determine, like, this is the area you're going for, this is the area the map's closing in on, and they're saying that also that looks super similar.
That is the most nitpicky nonsense in the world. Our game uses a blue circle, and also your game uses a blue circle, so therefore you must be ripping us off.
I mean, like, not to put too fine a point on it, and this is like an opinion-based thing, don't shout at me, but an argument could be made, don't sue me, to say that they obviously blatantly are ripping them off. Of course they are. The bigger problem is, can you do that in a video game world? Can you copyright these series of ideas? I get the impression that what they're trying to do here is build a case that if we can point out that they've copied all of these things, and that eventually this will add up to, right, okay, they've taken it too far, and they've lifted so many different aspects from gameplay mechanics to UI to weapon selections and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
That it'll eventually add up. But then, I mean, all you need to do is go back to, not even Wolfenstein, just choose GTA, for example. After GTA, the GTA 3 came out, that was just the explosion of third-person open-world games with a little map in the corner of the screen that, as you run around the screen, it rotates to adjust to your alignment, and, you know, Saints Row and all that business. Like, that all came off the back of GTA 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess Rockstar would have maybe loved to have sued them, possibly, just to try and, like, just nail down that corner of the market. But they didn't, and you get the feeling that the reason they didn't is because they couldn't.
Yeah.
Rather than because they didn't want to.
I mean, everyone at the time looked at Saints Row and said, this is a clone.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just widely known as the GTA clone.
Absolutely. It was a goofier version of GTA.
Mm.
Had more dildos. Although I think GTA's come closer to that in, you know, recent times. It's gotten more and more goofy. And Vice City was pretty goofy. But yeah, that's how it was referred to. It was like, oh, it's that game that's GTA, only sillier. Do you think they should be able to do this? Do you think anyone has grounds for this kind of stuff ever? Or do you think this is all a lost cause and people are just going to copy your game and you have to just deal with it?
I think, well, they've not really copied the game per se. I think it goes back, well, obviously some of the elements have been, you know, lifted. And they probably should have at least changed the colour of the circle and that kind of thing. change the UI colours and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think, they've not sort of wholesale taken PUBG and dumped it into a different engine or whatever. And
no, they haven't stolen assets
no,
or anything like that.
Which would be straight up illegal.
Yes.
Taking the idea itself, I suppose, isn't... Yeah, it goes back to that thing of, can you copyright a genre? And obviously you can't. But I guess it depends on... Is the Battle Royale game genre a genre, or is it a specific game that you can point to?
Yeah.
I guess. It's a very weird distinction, because it's got such a weird, finite set of rules.
Yes.
I suppose. That I can sort of see their case that people were ripping them off. Because it's more like taking a game mode and taking that, rather than a full game.
Exactly, because, I mean, wasn't it it was added to Fortnite, wasn't it? The Battle Royale mode. And now it's just become the only thing anyone plays.
Yeah. And PUBG is essentially just one game mode.
Yeah.
And it launched with one map and had very limited things. So I guess there's an argument there, but I think suing somebody because they've got similar compass stuff and similar weapons as well seems really dumb.
The weapons is the biggest reach, yes. The idea that
you can't have two games with a submachine gun. The other thing I would say is Fortnite has since added so much more stuff that it's become its whole different game.
Yeah.
Like you've got like heat-seeking missiles, and they've got all the crafting stuff, and they've just added shopping carts and stuff like that. Mm. So it's got its own sort of niche now, and it's developed its own style and stuff like that. So as it's moved on, it's become further and further from PUBG than what it was to start with. So I think in its current form, I would say it's a vastly different game, because they have different experiences and they cater to different audiences.
I'm wondering if they've amped it up a little bit, because I've been hearing that Fortnite's really starting to eat into PUBG in terms of user base.
That would explain why PUBG want to sue them. Because obviously, like, it's fine if they're both just next to each other, but as soon as Fortnite starts getting bigger than PUBG, at that point they're going to turn around and go, right, let's try and get a settlement. Get some money out of them.
Maybe. Well, as always, continue to follow it, but I don't see this one ending anything other than stalemate. But again, the legal wranglings in this are so grey and weird, and I think this is the problem where whatever is ruled in this case, people are worried about it setting a dangerous precedent from here on out.
Yes.
So if, for example, PUBG is successful in suing Epic and Fortnite, then it will change the way that people have to approach game development, which is based heavily, as lots of people have said, on iteration, on looking at something someone else has done and going, oh, I'll have that, and I'll try and improve it or tweak it in this way, and that's how games get better and genres develop.
Yeah.
And if you prevent people from doing that, and suddenly Rockstar are the only people allowed to make third-person open-world adventures with maps in the corners of the screen, then it might be a bit of a stifling place creatively.
So boring.
Yeah.
You don't only get GTA every 5 years. God.
They don't even need that, because they've already got the monopoly. Ridiculous, like, 7 billion or whatever they've made. Not even an exaggeration, 7 billion off of GTA 5. Insane.
Jesus.
I know, right. Anyway, talking about, like, monopolies in specific areas, when it comes to creature catching, it's all about that Pokemon's, isn't it?
That was tenuous.
Oh, shut up. Now that M's mic's gone iffy because of Windows 10, I'm just, like, eyeing the corner of my screen, waiting for the whole thing to explode. Because I've been saying mean things about Microsoft into a microphone, and we all know they're listening. God damn it. So, yeah, Pokemon news broke big this week. We have got the announcement of a new Pokemon game, or pair of games, as is always the case. So, new RPGs, Pokemon Let's Go Eevee and Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu. Both coming to Switch. Got a nice trailer there. You're more Pokemon-oriented than me, I suspect. It's looks like a Pokemon game to me.
Yeah. I'm not keen on it.
No?
If I'm honest,
no. Well, based on the trailers.
Yeah, it looks like a Pokemon game.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like it'll feel like a Pokemon game. It's still got all the Pokemon Go catching and stuff.
Yeah.
Which is making me wonder, is there going to be battles? And how's everything like that going to play? Because they're still saying, oh, we're going to do the full Pokemon RPG in 2019.
Oh.
So is this going to be like a pared back version that's aimed at a younger audience and therefore simpler and easier to get into? And with all the integration with Pokemon Go, are they going to focus more on that aspect of things? And I'm just like, it's not going to be the full experience. I'm sure it'll still be good.
I think you're right, because from what we've heard, they're pitching this whole, hey, it's good for veterans and newcomers, which is stuff that people trot out all the time, but I still think signifies it's going to be a bit more cash.
Yeah.
Other features that are designed specifically for the Switch is like, hey, you can play it with just one Joy-Con, which means that someone else can grab the other one and you can do this simultaneous two-player stuff going on. Not quite sure how that works. And as you mentioned, Pokemon Go connectivity is a big feature in this one. So you can basically bring your entire creature paddock, let's say, your base tree, over onto the Switch and sort of combine your two accounts. And I can see that being obviously a very popular thing. rather than to give you a justification for why you've just spent two summers or something wandering around in alleys waving your phone at thin air. At least now you've got a reason for doing all of that, so you can pull them all in. There's also a Pokeball peripheral, and this is something that's been coming for a while, because originally you had that watch, didn't you? Which would give you a little beep whenever stuff was nearby and you could catch it that way. Now they've got an actual ball, and this will work with the game, so you can like fling it at the screen, you know, like you do with a Wiimote, whoop, and then the ball comes flying out the top of the screen and you can go and catch your Pokemon. And I think it works IRL, doesn't it? So you wander around the streets with it and shake and throw, and then it goes whap, and then the creature, you can hear it screaming from inside the Pokeball. Which is a particularly nice touch, because it sounds well sinister.
Oh dear.
It brings home the harsh reality that what you're really doing is go around and imprisoning cute animals and then forcing them to fight like some kind of, like, you're basically Oliver Reed in Gladiator, whipping your poor little beaker. Get out there and tear it to pieces. It's basically cockfights. Isn't it? Dog fighting, like illegal dog fighting, is what you're doing. Just because they're cute and fluffy and they sing doesn't mean you are not their evil trainer, throwing them out to get torn to bits on the field of battle.
Jesus Christ. This is a kid's game, James.
Hey, I didn't design it. I'm just, that's what the game is. I think we've all had the wool pulled over our eyes for all this cutesy-cutesy chatty stuff. No, they're all their prisoners. Ash is just a sinister bastard. So it's called the Pokeball Plus, this little torture sphere, and you can, you'll be able to get it later on in the year. Pokemon Let's Go, EV/Pikachu, is coming out on November the 16th. We haven't got any information on the price yet, but it will be arriving. Wouldn't be surprised if, as you say, it's a bit of a stripped down thing, and then what, 2019, you'll get the full proper Pokemon RPG thing.
Unless in 2019 we just get Pokemon XD again.
You weren't a fan.
There was the GameCube one where you couldn't actually capture Pokemon. You had to, like, defeat... Yeah, you had to fight different trainers, and then they were evil, and they made their Pokemon evil. But if you beat them in a certain way, you could then kidnap their evil Pokemon and then purify them so that they were good now and they'd fight on your side.
Huh.
And it was not good. It was just like a traditional RPG. It wasn't really Pokemon-style RPG.
Oh, okay.
And it was... I don't think there was random battles. No, there was random battles, but you couldn't capture anything. You didn't have Pokeballs, basically. You had, like, a giant claw or something.
Right.
It was just the weirdest game. And I'm always terrified when they say, oh, yeah, we're going to do a console Pokemon now. It's like, oh, God, please don't do that again.
Did Aeris die?
No. Yeah. I don't think no one dies in Pokemon.
It's not a real RPG, ridiculous. Then. That's right, they all just faint, don't they?
Yeah, they white out.
So they're all just really high, is what you're saying.
Yes. How else do you explain Pokemon?
They have to take lots of recreational drugs in order to mask the horror of their captive lifestyle at the hands of evil Ash.
God almighty.
See, the mythos supports my theory.
Welcome to the Pocket Gamer fan theory podcast about why Pokemon's darker than you think.
I'm sure that podcast exists already.
Probably.
You don't get this far into a series this big without some serious deep dives. Right, so yeah, Pokemon stuff on the horizon. We will talk about Pokemon Switch game that's actually out right now in just a moment. First, though, Professor Layton and the Curious Village is coming to iOS and to Android. This is a game from, like, 2007, isn't it? Back on the 3DS?
Is it? It was,
yeah.
It was on the original DS.
On the original DS? Oh,
it was way back when.
Okay, yeah. So proper old one. And it is just basically a HD version. You've got a bunch of extra elements that are going to be coming. That's what they say. That's the quote. They haven't told us what those elements are. But it'll be HD'd up, and if there was any additions to the game, they'll be thrown in, I'm sure. And then, like, this is coming on the heels of... What was the last one? Layton's Mystery Journey?
Yeah.
That's the one,
well,
wasn't it?
Lady Layton, as I still refer to it, because that was a better name.
Ladyton. So they're going to bring that over. And that was quite good. Like, that was a good port that they did. It's done by Level 5, which is the same guys who ported that one, Ladyton. And we really liked it. Thought it was a good job. So we have got high hopes that they'll do a good job bringing this one up to speed as well.
Curious so, Village was an excellent game.
Oh, was it? I haven't played it.
Oh, you're missing out.
I haven't really done the Laytons.
Ah, oh, Layton's so good.
Yeah?
Yeah, they're all... Curious Village is a very strange one. And it sets up the rest of the series really nicely. And then every game after Curious Village just gets weirder and weirder and weirder.
Okay.
And then you get to the crossover with Phoenix Wright and it just explodes into joy.
I did see that.
That's like, it's one of my favourite games.
Is really?
Layton X Phoenix Wright. It's one of the dumbest crossovers you ever could have thought of. And they literally just mash the two genres together.
Yeah, so it's like solving the case and then just do a weird brain exercise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's the other way around.
Is it?
You do all these weird brain exercises and then someone accidentally trips over a dead body and it's like, oh, now we've got to do a court investigation. Oh, whoops. And then they added a thing where five people can be interrogated at the same time, which is really cool. And you have to juggle their responses. That was weird. Anyway, but Curious Village is brilliant, and it reminded me, when it first came out in the UK, Level 5 didn't think it was going to do very well, so they only produced a small number of carts.
Oh.
And it sold out almost instantly, because it got a huge buzz and everybody loved it and there was loads of advertising. So when it first came out, copies were going for like 90, 100 quid on eBay.
Damn.
Because it was so rare.
Did they do a reissue? Or
they did eventually. I think they upped the number of cartridges afterwards.
Okay.
But yeah, it'll be interesting to have it just available on mobile where everyone can get it and just avoid that whole thing. It's 10 years ago. It was a very different time.
It was. But I did play the Mystery Journey, not to completion, but I played it for the for videos and for the site and stuff. And it was good. It was really nicely done. I wasn't so keen on the Phoenix Wright HD versions that they released for iOS because the art was all weird.
Yeah, they're horrible.
It wasn't a good look.
I don't know why they threw out all the pixel art. Pixel art never dies. It looks beautiful at all times. That's why so many indie games still make games with pixel art. And they threw it all out for the Phoenix Wright HD remakes, and it still makes me cross.
Yeah.
I know we're talking about something completely different, but I'm so angry again.
That's true, when people do get uppity about it. I mean, they did it with the Final Fantasy VI, when that came over onto iOS.
Mm.
They smoothed off all the edges of the pixel art, and it looked like a really horrible like emulator filter or something. It was just like, ugh.
Ugh.
So that didn't work for us either. The purists get angry.
Preserve the past.
Which is something that Valkyrie Profile, which we'll be talking about in a minute or two, doesn't do. It stays true to the original graphics and it's all the better for it.
Ooh.
But yeah, these guys did it well, so keep your eyes peeled for Professor Layton and Curious Village. We'll let you know a release date as soon as we have it. Out and about this week, Pokemon Quest. This is the Switch game that was released this week. It is free to play on your Switch. You have played and reviewed it, Rick. What do?
It is an idle RPG.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a team of three Pokemon, and then you just kind of watch them run around a level, and they beat up all the other Pokemon, and then you beat a boss, and then you move on.
Okay.
It's very, very simple, so it's not going to appeal to everybody, but it's got lots of menus and leveling up and stuff like that. So when you fight, you get ingredients, and then you can use those ingredients to cook different meals, and then those meals attract Pokemon, and that's how you do summoning.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool because you can make different recipes and stuff, and different recipes will attract different Pokemon, so there's a little bit of fun in there. You also get these power stones, which you can then attach to your different Pokemon to give them boost to attack and defense and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they also occasionally have different stat boosts on top of that, which is really cool. So you just have this sort of team, and then you have to build them up, level them up, and make sure they're powerful enough for the next level. And you can really get into the nitty-gritty. You can start min-maxing. So I've got a team now where it's just like I've got one heavy hitter who sits out at the front, and then two long-range hitters who are like, one's got huge amounts of health in case everybody else dies, and one's got a huge amount of attack. So you can really get into it, but the actual core is very simple and basic, and it's not Pokemon as you would think of it, but it's still quite interesting in the way it does things.
Yeah. So, it looks quite Minecrafty. It's gone for that blocky art style, hasn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure about the blocky art style, to be honest. But it's functional. It works. It's low cost, I guess, in resources. So it's gonna come to mobile in the future. So when it comes to mobile, I imagine it'll play great
Oh, okay. Yeah. And when you say the characters just run around, do they literally just, they get into a fight and then they just start running off to the next fight and you just sort of sit back and watch?
Yeah, they've got special moves and stuff that you can trigger. But you have a max of like 2 special moves per Pokemon. They have different effects and stuff like that. Some of them have pushback, some of them are area of effect, some of them do buff, some of them recover, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Or you can just set the game to auto and it'll just do all those for you, which is how I play, because it's the fastest way of doing things. It's a little bit slow in terms of, like, attack pace.
Right.
If you remember Disney Battle Heroes, it's that kind of...
I do.
A bit slow-paced. But it looks nice, it plays nice, it's very polished for what it is. There's tons of content already in there. It's not horrendously grindy, although it's not exactly fair.
Generous, maybe.
Yeah, it's not exactly generous, but it's not, like, horrendous. I've managed to clear 3 stages, so, like, 3 worlds, and I've opened up maybe, like, half the map to play with. So, you know, you make good progress even without paying anything.
Okay.
It's probably worth a look if you're into that kind of thing and you like Pokemon.
We gave it 7 out of 10, Bronze Award, and... Fine, if you know what you're getting yourself into, I guess.
Yes.
All right, well, sticking with that kind of RPG thing, Might and Magic Elemental Guardians appeared over on iOS and Android. This is from Ubisoft and is quite pretty and more mid-core, I'd say, than the Pokemon one that you're talking about.
Yes.
You are more engaged in this. It is still just a series of battles with your team that you build up and add members to and fight the waves of beasties as they come at you. And then once they're dead, you use crystal stuff that you get to boost your XP, and then you get little, I forget what they're called now, like stones.
Glyphs,
that's right. And then you embed your glyphs in each of the characters, then you level up the glyphs themselves, and they'll have an effect on your strength or your dexterity or your whatever. And you can level those as well as leveling the characters themselves. It's also, like, with the free-to-play world, that's really what it is all about. It's not just, like, improving your characters. It's so unbelievably granular, and each one of those little bits requires a different energy type to level up. And it's where I start to go, ugh, with all of this. However, we've both played this. And it's actually quite good at doing what it's doing, I think.
Yes. Yeah. It's very polished.
So this is one of the ones where I've really felt the benefit of putting it on fast mode. I don't do auto, because otherwise I can't get any pleasure from it, because I'm just like, I might as well not be here.
Yeah.
But putting it on speed, sometimes I don't like that because it does make everything look quite comical in games. Suddenly everyone goes... and it looks daft. However, when your characters are issuing attacks in this game, and you've got a variety of different styles, some of them are creature-looking things, like you start off with a little sort of mini griffin cat, who then evolves into something much bigger. But you also have your Shiva-looking ice goddess and the big armored dude and all of that. The attacks, when you speed them up, land really hard. So it's actually quite satisfying, because I can't go, wah-pah! Like... And that's good, because I'm watching it going, hey, you know, these, not only are they lightning fast, but they're also kicking ass. Well done. And you have the rock, paper, scissors thing. There are 5 different elements this time rather than just 3. And so you are trying to choose, like, right, you attack this guy because you'll get a boost over him, and then you attack the other guy because he'll get a boost on them. And then you've got a kind of a caster standing behind the whole thing. So as well as your creatures, your soldiers out front, you've also got your dude standing at the back. And when he gets charged up or she gets charged up, you can launch a kind of area effect. Bam, hits all the enemies. And they can also be adapted and leveled and all this kind of stuff. So a lot going on. You can really fire through it quite quickly when you put the speed on. It's still satisfying. It is quite generous.
Yes.
I haven't been locked out yet. I've been playing for ages. And I think Harry was playing it for like 5 days, you know, before we started the review and still hadn't been kicked out. So that's pretty good. And it's just slick. There's no shortage of these things on iOS. And I think that there is going to be, or Android, and it's always going to be difficult to make an impression and kick the other one out of the way because this genre is just so saturated. But it's a good one if you like these things. More engaged than that, you still have to tap to attack and then choose, you know, how you're going to attack, and there are 3-4 different attacks you can use and all that. So it's not an idle one, but equally it's not full RPG in the sense of a story or anything. You are just jumping from battle to battle to battle.
One thing I do like as well, because I do play in auto mode quite a lot, you can select which unit you're attacking, even when you're in auto. A lot of these RPGs don't let you do, and it can be quite annoying when you're just watching your team sort of spread the damage across all the different enemies, and you're not getting anywhere. Whereas in this, if you want everyone to focus on one enemy, you just tap them and it comes up with a little target area around them, and everyone will just converge their efforts onto that one target. Just really cool. It means you can play auto, but you can still sit there and go, oh, actually, I think you should be doing this instead, and still get involved, and also stop staring at your screen and going, oh, you stupid idiot, but not have to like jump in and slow down the pace of things, just let it roll, whilst also helping out in some way. I wish more games would do that. Sometimes they just ignore it, and the targeting doesn't always work, but it's good.
I've only ever hit that button to see, like, just briefly how it works. I never actually play for any period of time in auto mode, so that's interesting. But yeah, free to download, obviously. We'd recommend this one amongst the mountains of others, so if you're interested, Might and Magic Elemental Guardians, pretty good for what it is. Let's do... Sticking with the RPGs, Valkyrie Profile Lenneth came out. Now, this is a Squeenix port of a game from... God, when was this released? Is this PS1 era, it looks like?
I thought it was a PSP game.
PSP? Oh, there you go, then. That makes sense.
Possibly. I don't know.
Right, so it is actually quite different from the standard Square Enix JRPG thing. So rather than the Final Fantasy or Dragon Quest... format where you've got the big overworld map and then you go into cities and it's top down and, you know, looks like Zelda, the original Zelda rather. This is side scrolling for pretty much all of it. Huh. That's the unusual tweak you've got there. You play as a bunch of Norse god type dudes, specifically the Valkyrie of the title, who comes down and has to run around the world kicking the crap out of everything, yada yada, harvest souls, final battle, end all battles, etc. JRPGs, you know how they go. So the battle system is more about combos than just you attack you and then you attack you, which is usually the way that they go. You know, each player has one attack and then you move through the characters, bap bap bap, and then the other characters have a bosh. This one is like more kind of active time. So say you've got three characters in your party, the idea is you want to go tap 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 or tap tap, sort of tap one guy twice, one guy at once, or tap the three in different orders, and you can kind of combo attacks together in real time, and that's what gives you bonuses and boosts. And then sometimes individual characters can attack more than once, and you go da-da-da, and they launch. So it's got a little bit more of a real-time, say, active-time feel to it. And then when you're exploring dungeons, it's side-scrolly, you know, almost Metroidvania, where you're running around dungeons and going to the foreground and to the background. So there's a map mode, there's a map view, which gives you the side on, but it's one of those ones where, you know how if you're in a building and it's showing it in a 3D map, you can jump up and down the floors, so all kind of grey out areas are not on, you can select first floor, second floor, and you can see it in a 3D projection. This has that, only it goes back into the screen, so it's got depth rather than height. So you're like a foreground, and then a middle ground, and then a background, and you can push forward and backwards to kind of your character just walks into a doorway in the background, and then boof, you're on another 2D plane. Good stuff is that the fighting is more interesting with the active time. It's got a really... They haven't done anything to bring the graphics up to date or anything. It's proper OG graphics, which look lovely. I say they do look a bit PS1 era, which would make sense with the fact it's on a PSP. So nice, like proper old-fashioned anime style, lovely. On the downside, the whole platforming side of it, i.e. it's two dimensions and you do have to do some jumping and you fire crystals into walls and then use them as platforms to jump off of. The older touchscreen controls for that, not so good. Very, very twitchy. Don't really like it. Your character goes from still to immediately running at 1,000 miles an hour with the slightest twitch of your thumb, and it's very, you know, uncomfortable to try and get the platforming bits even close to right. But it's still good and slightly different from the standard. I get the impression it's another one of these like £15-18 ones.
Yeah,
but you knew that because it was a Square Enix classic RPG. But we think it's quite good. We liked it. I think the original game's got a bit old fan base, so you might like this one. Do watch the video review so you know what you're getting yourself in for, because obviously these things cost a pretty penny. But Valkyrie Profile Lenneth is the name of that one. Now, we've both played Space Pioneer. You might have played it more than me. What's a Space Pioneer?
So as far as I could tell, I played it for about two missions. I enjoyed it. But it's top-down shooty action across various levels, and you level up your character as well.
You do. So sci-fi twin-stick shooter without the other stick. So you just move around with one stick, and there's a fire button and a grenade button. But it's that kind of three-quarter view tilted 3D top-down stuff. Mm. You don't have to worry about aiming. You'll automatically aim at whatever is closest and just start shooting. You have to capture points on the map. So you go over there and try and claim a wee space station. You do that by standing inside a little circle that appears when you're close. Stay in there long enough, fighting off all the beasties, and boom, you've gained control of that area. Then move on to another bit on the map, and then when you're all done, you just run back to a wee warp point and back out in space. And then, as you say, you get to level up your guy and do a bits of bobs, then back down and shoot some more stuff. Nice and light and simple. We actually really liked it. There's a bunch of interchangeable skills on cooldowns that you have that you can use. We gave it a silver. Simple, but it is good fun and does exactly what it wants to do. So Space Pioneer is the name of that one. Now, I've had a quick go on Feist. Mm-hmm. Which I know has been on a bunch of people's radars for a while, because it's one of those incredibly pretty limbo, Badlands-looking silhouette platformers, which are now, again, we talk about copying ideas, kind of a genre of their own now, after Limbo came out. And Limbo wasn't the first one to do it either, but it was just super popular and put it on everyone's radar. So after that, you got a bunch of games that had, oh, look, we're going to do a silhouette platformer that's quite dark and grimy as well. And this is doing that, but it's less puzzly and more creature-y, but no less dark. Like, a whole bunch of creatures tromp past the screen at the beginning of the game, these furry, almost like porcupine bear-looking bastards. And then you are effectively presented in the next screen in a box. So you're like their little prisoner, and you have to roll down the hill and smash yourself out of this box. And then you come charging out of it, and you're like a little short version of one of those things. Quite cute and scrappy. But then you're, you know, as well as jumping around, and you can jump on the tree branches, which are all kind of elastic, it's really beautifully animated and done. And then you've got little horrible slug pointy creatures that you've got to avoid. You can pick things up in the game, so you can collect objects and then use them either as platforms to jump off of, or you can lob them at stuff or throw sticks at things. And it gets quite violent when you start pushing into it, much more than Limbo, which you're basically defenseless. Mm-hmm. But it still puts an emphasis on platforming and avoiding creatures as well, because everything is covered in spikes, so you have to stay well away from it. But I'd like to play more of it. I mean, I've already captured a bit of video for a review, and I'm going to continue. It feels nice. There's quite an urgency when you're playing. Like, Limbo's very slow. The boy walks very slowly. This isn't that. The little creature is very reactive and fast and zippy, and yeah, it feels nice. It's got a little bit of zest to it, and you can have a go at it for free. In order to unlock the rest of the game, you need to pay, and I think it's, you know, $2.99, $3.99 or something, but you can play a bunch of the beginning of the game for nothing. Feist is the name of that one. Is that everything? Is there anything else that I've missed?
I played a bit of the Street Fighter 30th Edition collection.
Oh, what? Is this on Switch? Okay.
Yeah. So it's the first 12 Street Fighter games.
Holy cow.
So you get the original Street Fighter, which is god-awful, and then you get Street Fighter 2, all its variations up to Super Street Fighter Turbo 2, all three Street Fighter Alpha games, and then the three variants they did on Street Fighter 3 as well.
Does it have Street Fighter EX plus Alpha?
It does not.
The weird 3D one?
No.
Okay.
It's all just the classic 2D sprite-based ones.
Does it have the Street Fighter where they use the characters from the film, like Mortal Kombat?
No.
Oh, mate.
Was that Street Fighter 2010 or something?
I don't know what... No, it was
a weird one.
That film with Kylie Minogue and Jean-Claude Van Damme in it, there was a Street Fighter version released where their likenesses were taken, and it was scanned in like... And it looked like Mortal Kombat.
What? That's weird. No, that's not in there.
Damn.
Here
it's terrible.
So you get all these games, and you can play them all, and they're all very cool. You just get the arcade mode for all of them, and you can also do versus in some of them, and you can do online versus in four of them, I think.
Okay.
So it has online play, and you can do all that kind of thing. And that's kind of cool, because you can play all these games, and you get to see the differences yourself and stuff. It also has a really comprehensive museum mode, where they've dug into all the archives and pulled out, like, the original design documents of the very first Street Fighter, and, like, original artwork that they did for Ryu and stuff like that. And then there's a full, like, 78-photo slideshow of the full development and design of Street Fighter 2, which obviously was the big game that changed everything. And so you get, like, the very first stuff, and the first 8 characters they designed for it before they even had names and this kind of thing, and then the game gets cancelled, and it goes through the history of that happening, and then coming back, and them adding the things, and you can see that it's got pictures of, like, how they designed the animations and stuff.
See, I'm not even a Brawler fan, really, or a Street Fighter player. I want to see that. This is proper history.
It's definitely the thing that sells the game. Obviously, it's great that you get to play all these other games, and you do have, like, you know, 12 games to choose from, and you can pick your favourite and hammer away at that. And it is good fun to play. It works on the Switch. It's fast, it's pacey, it still looks gorgeous. Mm. But the museum is, like, where, if you're a fan and you don't know all this stuff, and even if you're not a fan, you still just want to dig into, like, classic game design and stuff. It is fascinating.
Okay.
I don't know if it's worth the asking price alone just for that, but...
What are they charging for?
It's £45 on Switch, which is it's kind of a high price, but if you're, like, dedicated to Street Fighter, you should get it.
Yeah.
Because it is wonderful. The online works, but it's a bit slow sometimes. Mm-hmm. But it's not, like, so bad that it just drops completely. It just sort of slows down the frames rather than dropping frames, which is nice.
Okay.
I like it, but it's more sort of the nostalgia value and the intrigue behind it and stuff that I think is what really sells it.
Sounds more like a collector's box set of something you already have but really like.
Exactly. It's going to appeal to that kind of fan. It's also got a full timeline of every game that's ever been released, and I think it does mention even the weirder games, like the weird side-scrolly Street Fighter Future game or whatever it was, and like the Final Fight games. Though noticeably, it doesn't mention Puzzle Fighter on mobile.
Oh.
Came out earlier this year, I think.
Yeah, I remember that.
Now been shut down.
Oh, really? Already?
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't
know. So I'm wondering if that's why. If maybe they're just going to kind of scrub that one from Capcom's history and forget they ever did the Puzzle Fighter.
Well, I appreciate a mention at least of Final Fight, because I got a lot of time for Final Fight. I like that game. Good stuff. All right, well, what's the full thing called? Street Fighter Collection?
Fighter 30th Anniversary Collection. It's available on Switch, and it's £45.
Nice one. All right, then go and get that, or go and get all the other free mobile stuff I mentioned, if you don't have 45 quid. Thank you all for listening this week. We hope to return with Emily once she's fixed her bleeding computer next week. But until then, go play some stuff. Thank you, as always, for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.